Welcome to the Short Books podcast. I'm delighted to have David Brooks here, author of The Social Animal, and this is Ben Rogers, Associate Fellow at the RSA and Director for the Centre for London. Welcome, David. Welcome to London.
Oh, good to be here.
I read your book and enjoyed it enormously. I thought we could begin by talking about the rather unusual form the book takes, because it's a book which is about recent social scientific and psychological thinking and its relevance for our understanding of human nature, but you've chosen to cast it as a novel. Where did that idea come from? And tell us a bit about the two central characters of the book.
Yeah, the idea more or less came from Rousseau's Emile, though other people have done it, have used stories to sort of illustrate philosophical points. And I thought it would work for me because, in the first place, I'm a journalist and not an academic, so I like to have examples. And so I thought I could use two characters to show how this academic research takes place in laboratories applies to concrete circumstances. Second, I thought it would be more fun to write and to read if it had a narrative drive. I could make fun of rich people and make fun of contemporary mores more. And third, if the thesis of the research is that information hits us both as a rational level, as argument, but information also hits us emotionally as narrative. And a lot of the book is about the power of emotion. So I thought to have a narrative would be a useful thing. And so I created two characters, which more or less I used to play out the research. One of them is a girl who starts out poor and then climbs through life, becomes aggressively ambitious. And I use that to show how circumstances of poverty can have negative effects and how those effects can be counteracted. And then I have another character, the male, a guy named Harold, who's charming and more or less middle class, upper middle class. And in the course of the book, he becomes a little deeper. He becomes to see deeper into himself. So I use these two characters from contrasting backgrounds to really illustrate two different ways of life and how in those ways of life, some of the psychological and neurological realities play out.
And let's talk a bit about the big sort of themes of the book, because I suppose one way of characterizing it is to say it's an argument with a certain dominant idea in our culture or set of ideas about human nature and human rationality.
If you take all the research that's been done over the past 30 years, it's really given a much deeper understanding of human nature. And it doesn't give us new philosophies, but it reminds us which of the old philosophies are right and which are the ones that are wrong. And so if you want to put it in sports terms, the French Enlightenment with René Descartes loses, and the Scottish or British Enlightenment with David Hume wins. And René Descartes thought reason was the strongest of our faculties, and we could really use reason to reason through life and to reorganize our lives. Hume thought the reason was weak and the sentiments were strong. And the research really vindicates that point of view, that most of our thinking is unconscious, it's below awareness, and most of that thinking uses systems that have to do with emotion, and emotion really organizes the way we think. And that we're not really individual reasoning creatures. We are emotional, social creatures, and we're deeply interpenetrated one with another. So one of the fascinating things for me was that even though it's done through the vein of science, and it's using some high technology fMRI machines and brain scan machines, it's really deeply humanistic, emphasizing social connection and emotion. And so one of the exciting things for me was it's bringing the two cultures together, of science and the humanities.
And I suppose one of the headline arguments is that we're just rather bad as individuals at understanding what makes us happy.
Right.
And is that to what extent do you think that is a peculiar feature of our culture, I suppose?
I do think there's a cultural bias toward things we can count and measure. And so we tend to overvalue money, for sure. We tend to overvalue professional accomplishment. We tend to undervalue social connection. Getting married is easily the most important thing you can do to improve your happiness and well-being. Joining a club that meets once a month produces the same happiness gain as doubling your income. And so it's partly we have this rationalistic culture. It's partly that we've become male-dominated societies, and a lot of women, when they read my book, they say, well, duh, we know all this. It's maybe news to you. In part, we have culture. We have a great misapprehension that we're divided selves, that reason is on one hand and that emotion is on the other, and that we succeed to the extent that reason can conquer the passions. And that's not true. The passions, educating your emotions is really the central thing.